What are people up to in town? Find out on Out There Wednesday afternoons from 4 to 5 on Valley Free Radio for live encounters from the streets and paths of Northampton and beyond. We don't care if we live out of date. We don't care if we're a little bit late. Gonna mix it, baby, me and you. On my rocking bicycle that's built for two. We don't And you're listening to Out There today. Oh, my thingamajig promo there still said it was Wednesdays. It's actually Tuesdays now. Tuesdays at 3 o'clock for March and April of 2020 while I'm in town before I go back to Trinidad in May. Started last week on the Tuesday slot. Today, Tuesday, March 3rd, I have live guests in the studio. Thanks very much for coming in, Kat and Albie. The live guests are Kat Alonzo, a street outreach worker for Harm Reduction Hedgehogs, and Albie Park, co-founder of Harm Reduction Hedgehogs. I forgot to do a mic check before the clock hit three. So, Kat, can you say hi?
Hello.
Very good.
Hi, everybody.
All right. Well, I guess we'll just start by one of you just want to say, what is Harm Reduction Hedgehogs?
Harm Reduction Hedgehogs, or rather HRH413. We started that a couple years ago, me and my co-founder, Jess Tilley, to do best practice harm reduction trainings, things of this nature, just trying to elevate the practice of harm reduction in the Valley and in all of Western Massachusetts.
Yeah, so if people don't know what harm reduction is, can you just say a little bit more about that?
So what people are probably most familiar with is probably syringe access programs as what harm reduction is. But harm reduction, from a public health definition, is really just disease prevention and overdose prevention. It's not really more complicated than that. Mm-hmm. But that's just the public health definition. In fact, as a movement, what harm reduction is about is really understanding that drug users and survival sex workers are some of the most marginalized people in our communities. And mm-hmm. It's really typical for people to become uncomfortable around folks who are really struggling. And harm reduction takes the stance that everyone has autonomy and agency. Mm-hmm. And we respect people's autonomy and agency, which means that we understand that it's a given in this world that people use drugs. We've had the war on drugs going for decades, totally unsuccessfully, and people are still using drugs. Mm-hmm. So we just try to stay in reality as much as possible, mm-hmm. deal with reality as much as possible, and create interventions and services for people that are in reality and respect people's agency and autonomy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Kat, do you want to say anything?
Yes, I met Albie last year. In the summer of last year, I met Albie, and how I met Albie was totally a fluke. I just showed up with a young woman who brought me to one of the meetings, saying that it might be helpful because I had been an IV drug user 25 years ago and I have been clean. And I had recently had relapsed on alcohol and showed up at a meeting and didn't know what was happening to me. And I was very unhealthy and very sick. And it was totally non-judgmental. And people were brilliant and just so on it. And like, there was no shame involved at all. So I was immediately taken by the whole idea of harm reduction because I knew what I needed to do. I just didn't want anybody pushing me or forcing me to do something that I wasn't quite ready to do. Mm-hmm. So now that I'm better, I was actually doing outreach unwittingly with homeless friends on the street, just kind of like helping people out. Finding tents, blankets, food, shoes, clothing, like anything I could do to help all my friends on the streets. And because I was on the streets when I was a kid. And yeah, it was really difficult. And I know what it's like. And I have a room now and shelter. And I'm trying to sort of incorporate that into the harm reduction structure, because there's so many homeless people on the streets that are addicts or alcoholics that just need a place to be where they're not being judged or shamed by someone. And so that's what keeps me engaged in the whole process of harm reduction, because I would not be sober and healthy if it were not for people like Albie and some of the people in my life that have helped me along the way to sort of survive for as long as I have. So that's what I'm doing.
Yeah. When I was looking at your the flyer that you gave us, Kat, the one about where it says, "No, we believe the stigma is oppression." Wasn't that from this flyer? Mm-hmm. Yeah, we believe another word for stigma is oppression. Yep. Like, there is such stigma when, you know, people coexist with their addictions in many other non-stigmatized ways, but certain ones, like society, really stigmatizes harshly.
What is addiction, really?
Like, right, because there's like so many coffee, drugs, working. We could go on and on. And many people can function, even like with, you know, like harder drugs, or IV drugs, alcohol. You know, many people are functioning, but and if as long as they can, you know, keep it hidden on some in some way, then they don't get judged so harshly for it.
Yeah, it's not blatant. Like the whole thing with me in downtown Northampton is that I'm visible. I'm on my bike all the time, hanging out with my homeless friends. Just like, just Albie and I on our way here, I saw this guy whose dog needed dog food because he hasn't eaten in 2 days, or his dog. So Albie gave me some $5 to give to him because I felt so bad leaving him there. I was like, you know, so it's like this person is dealing with some sort of mental health issues, which is a big part of it, and PTSD, and a lot of veterans are on the streets. A lot of my friends growing up were Vietnam veterans, and now I see a lot of current veterans on the streets hanging out in the park in Northampton, and it's like this whole underground world where people just don't see it, and if they do, it's too scary and they just ignore it, or they just can't talk about it. You know, but I am an approachable person, and so I try to create that bridge. I talk with the cops and I sit with my homeless friends on the street and while they're panhandling, and I talk to the cops and I explain, this is my friend so and so, this is what they're doing, this is why, and then I just continue to try to show up and be like a small bridge for that conversation to actually continue to happen. So people aren't so so afraid of helping someone, you know?
You mentioned the bikes.
Yeah, bikes.
I always love seeing you on your bike with a bike trailer doing your thing.
Ever since I was a little girl, I was like, as soon as I got my big wheel, I was gone. I burned the tires on it from, and I was just like, man, bikes calm me down and soothe me and keep me autistically happy. So,
and thanks for that bike that you gave to the Trinidad Project. That was that's a great bike for the Trinidad Project that I'm working on.
Yay, Ruthie. So, Albie, do you have a bike?
I do have a bicycle.
Kind of metaphysical. Random,
So, Albie, why is it called Harm Reduction Hedgehogs?
Oh, so the actual name is HRH413, but HRH stands for Harm Reduction Hedgehogs. The reason why is that my co-founder, Jess Tilly, is really, really well respected and well known in harm reduction circles, and she's also known for raising hedgehogs. So she said that to me one day, and I was like, are you serious? And then, you know, but she makes the point that hedgehogs are similar to harm reductionists in the sense that a lot of harm reductionists are a little bit prickly on the outside, but really are really soft and gushy on the inside, on the underbelly. You know, we have our little feet and boots to the ground and go and do what needs to happen, even though it might be interfered with by law enforcement, because not in all areas of the country, some of the things that we do, like distributing supplies, can be illegal. So the history of harm reduction is one where people saw that people were dying, that their friends were dying, and they couldn't stand it anymore. And so people just started setting up tables and distributing supplies. And that eventually led us to where we are today.
Oh, a hedgehog. That's a porcupine.
Kind of.
Yeah, kind of. Okay, okay.
They're really cute.
I was thinking about that too. I was like,
what is a hedgehog?
I know. They're really.
Which one is it?
Right. Very feisty.
Yeah, can you talk some more about the relationships that you have with people in the community? Well, like city officials or police or more formalized, either one of you. Can you, what kind of relationships, what are some of the challenges and joys there?
Do you want to?
I just wanted to say, first of all, that I have not voted locally or federally in years because I was so disillusioned after Union Busters shut down my fundraising organization in which I was a union steward. So I just screw it. And then I just got involved because harm reduction is an inclusive concept, which includes anyone who wants to reduce harm and not see people suffer. And so I'm on the streets all the time hanging out with my friends and looking at suffering every single day. And I just decided, well, okay, my friend Alex Jarrett is running for city council. I'm going to totally support that and go all out. And I just went and showed up, and I've been a hermit for ever. And I was just I'm just going to show up and say something. Just show up, say something. And it was amazing how much the sort of political world and the social world opened up to me. Now I can talk to anyone now. I'm a blabbermouth. Yeah. I can talk to anyone now that I know I can. And I have police officers and city councilors and just homeless schizophrenics as my friends now. And it just that's harm reduction, building those bridges.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, when you came to the city council meeting a couple of weeks ago, it was the first city council meeting I'd been at in a while. Mm-hmm. And when I speak before city council meetings, I get really nervous. I always get so nervous. But no, when you got up and talked, I was like, dang, she says that's the first one she's been to and she's not even nervous at all.
I was nervous. I was stuttering.
Right. But Kat can pull off more than might imagine. Really. And, it's the same thing as for me, for most people, it's sort of not being able to see my own strengths, my own triumphs, et cetera. The same certainly goes true for Kat since I've known Kat. It's been really amazing, actually, to see somebody working really hard to maintain their compassion and kindness. Mm-hmm. Because really, that's what harm reduction is. Yeah. I was telling people that, in the I came of age in San Francisco in the late 80s and 90s. And so my experience was that for a long time, I was going to memorial services every weekend, sometimes twice in a day, oftentimes Saturday and Sunday. And it just kept on going. And I remember that there was this one time where I saw this man who was really, really frail, and he was pulling behind him his oxygen tank. He was covered in Kaposi sarcoma lesions, and it was amazing because as he walked down the street, people just parted, right? Mm-hmm. And I can still see that image in my head, and I knew that there were some people who were just he should go away. I don't want to see that. That's exactly. Mm-hmm. And the thing that I've realized from having survived the worst parts of the AIDS pandemic is that I have seen people do really incredibly humanitarian, really kind, really compassionate things. And I've also seen people do horrible things, right? So one of the things I've had to sort of incorporate into my understanding of the world is that while I do, in fact, respect and love people, at the same time, I have to also accept the fact that people are also part monster sometimes. Mm-hmm. And that monster often comes out in an expression of disdain or hatred or whatever towards stigmatized populations, mm-hmm. right? So the reason why I do this work, I'm not concerned about the humanity of the folks that, the participants that I work with. I'm not at all afraid of. What I am afraid of, though, for is the humanity of the people who judge them, mm-hmm. who go straight into NIMBYism, who don't understand how gentrification is destroying people and how it is creating homelessness and just driving anguish. Mm-hmm. And the anguish then linked to trauma. Mm-hmm. You know, people are just trying to cope with what they got. And so for the fact that some people use substances in order to find relief is totally unsurprising to me.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. I'm here with Albie Park, who was just talking, co-founder of Harm Reduction Hedgehogs, HRH413, and Kat Alonzo. This is Valley Free Radio. We're going to take a little break and come back with more. This is Marianne Faithful. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, yes, thank you.
As soon as you're born, they make you feel small by giving you no time instead of it all. You feel nothing at all. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. They hurt you at home and they hit you at school. You still.
slept.
You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm here in the studio with Albie Park, co-founder of Harm Reduction Hedgehogs, and Kat Alonzo, a street outreach worker with Harm Reduction. Albie, can you just tell me how you came to Harm Reduction?
Sure. I was in what I would call typical abstinence-based recovery for 25 years. During that time period, when I had been about 2 or 3 years abstinent, that I ended up interviewing for a job at a recovery facility, and that recovery facility was for people with HIV and AIDS, and that was substance use, obviously. Those were the two criteria. My qualifications at that point, which is like kind of the standard at the time, was simply 2 years of continuous sobriety. Uh-huh. That was like what was written on the flyer, which clearly made me all very qualified to work with people with HIV and AIDS and mental health diagnoses and incredible trauma, blah, 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 blah. So, but anyway, I say that because treatment in general in this country is really driven by peers. And there's something to be said around the idea that people with lived experience can obviously create most rapport with other people who are having lived experience, you know. And I think that what happened for me when I ended up doing this job is I actually found out that I liked it. Mm-hmm. I actually found out that I was good at it. But there was one day when we got a new resident, and I can't remember his name. I can see his face. So I just call him Henry when I tell this story. And Henry was this incredibly sweet African-American man who was about, I want to say about 35, maybe. Very soft-spoken, very gentle in his demeanor. And he had been using heroin for at least a decade at that point. So he came into the house, obviously without any heroin on him, and the heroin had been masking a bunch of symptoms for him. Mm-hmm. So for one, it masked incredibly terrible neuropathy that he had in both of his legs. So he had major tingling and pain in both of his legs that made it difficult to walk. His teeth were really bad because he hadn't gotten any dental care in this time. So it was painful for him to eat. But the most difficult part for him was that he had incredible diarrhea, which was HIV related, but also, which he didn't know because the opiates were constipating, because that's what opiates do, right? Mm-hmm. So he couldn't get more than 2 blocks from the house without soiling himself. Mm-hmm. And I remember that I was there one day. I was the only person on staff there, and it was storming out really bad. Really, really bad. And the policy was if somebody didn't come home by the time that they said they were going to be back, that we had to lock the door within 15 minutes, I think it was. And I remember going and locking the door and thinking to myself, I'm locking the door on a man with full-blown AIDS and making, you know, taking away his housing, taking away, like, all of it. And this is wrong. Mm-hmm. This is just wrong. Mm-hmm. Eventually, I left the field for a while, and then I ended up getting hired by a friend of mine who hired me to be part of a program called the Stonewall Project, which was for gay men who were using methamphetamine. And it was one of the very first true harm reduction programs in San Francisco. And one of the things that I liked about that in particular was that harm reduction is sort of amazing in the sense that it just gives me so many tools to talk to people, because I'm not expecting people necessarily to want abstinence, to be abstinent necessarily. But I certainly have the skills and the tools to be able to encourage and help somebody achieve that if that's what they want, you know. But I also was able to see that people have come in for treatment, had so many different backgrounds, had so many different complicating factors in their lives that it was as a provider, because I'd been in the field at that point probably about 8 years. Mm-hmm. As a provider, to be able to talk to people in a way without an agenda, to see where they were coming from, mm-hmm. was so helpful. And I saw incredible things happen as a result of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so, and mostly what it comes down to is that, you know, people could actually tell me whether or not they were using and not be afraid that I was going to do anything to them. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I wasn't going to threaten their housing. I wasn't going to lecture them. I wasn't going to do anything, you know.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
Right. And the work of treatment is this, really, essentially, that I used to say this to my folks, is that, you know, you can lie to me if you want. I'm not really invested in trying to figure out what the truth is. But if you do lie to me, you have to understand that I'll be supporting the wrong person. Mm. Right. and that they also, because it was a harm reduction program and because I wasn't expecting them to have any particular goal, it meant that we could talk about so many different cofactors that were going into what was driving them, what was making them crazy. We could really explore what was the difference between what were the pros and what were the cons of the choices.
Yeah.
So I used to say to people, you know, you can come in here the first couple times if you've like violated or whatever, you've gone outside your goal, you know, and if I ask you what happened, you can say, I don't know, maybe one, maybe two times. But after that, you're going to have to at least guess, because that's treatment. That's the work of treatment, trying to figure this out.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a really, it's a really interesting adventure to go on, people, to help them to understand that you actually have a reasoning process behind this. This is not something you just do.
Uh-huh.
You know, that there are choices and points of choice that happen constantly in the midst of what people would call a habit, you know, or addiction, you know, so, or problematic drug use, whatever you want to call it. So that's how it all started. And I met Kat because so one of the things that's really true is that there's a lot of support for abstinence-based recovery and treatment in this country. It's what is considered the gold standard. And there's a lot of misunderstanding of where that intersects with harm reduction. Because a lot of times what people think harm reduction is harm reduction is the encouragement of people using,
which is not enabling,
right? Enabling, co-ing, whatever. And in fact, you know, harm reduction and abstinence are not in any way in opposition to each other, even though that's the way a lot of people naively position it. In fact, abstinence is a harm reduction goal for some people, not everyone, but it is a very viable, real, realistic, and necessary goal for some people. But in working in treatment and harm reduction, my experience has been is that the person has to figure that out for themselves. If I start to say, you can't, you shouldn't, that's not helpful.
Yeah.
It's just not helpful. Mm-hmm. So when I met Kat, it was at a meeting that we're calling Harm Reduction Works, or HRW, which comes out of my culminating project from graduate school, which at the time was to create a sort of alternative to abstinence-based programs and 12-step, smart recovery, et cetera, but to create a harm reduction program for, at the time, for gay men who were using methamphetamine. But then I moved out of the country, and so I didn't really follow it through. 10 years later, I'm in Western Massachusetts. I hook up with Jess to make this, make HRH, and I suddenly remembered I did this. So I showed it to her. She read it. She's like, this actually is pretty good, you know. So, and that started the process of getting this meeting off the ground. So we started this meeting called Harm Reduction Works, which is a harm reduction-based, replicable, fully scripted meeting that we originally founded as an alternative to abstinence-only programs like 12-step, smart recovery, et cetera. Because it was so desperately needed. And, you know, Kat alluded to this earlier, but that's where I met Kat. And, you know, I'll let Kat say what the experience was, what the differences are, what the nuances are.
Oh, boy.
So go for it, Kat.
do I have a minute?
I
can't sum that up. All I can say is that something, it's, I've been using phrases like immediate and actual in my life more often, because I immediately, actually resonated with the people in that room. And there were probably about a handful of us. And I just said, I was just, and here's another word that I've been using, embedded in my mind. When something makes sense to me or I resonate with something, it just sticks. Somebody will say something to me 25 years ago and I'll still remember it to this day if it made a shift in me. So I came to harm reduction from a pretty severely traumatized welfare Springfield background where I was constantly being chased around and harmed by people. And I was like a little bunny rabbit trying to like be a lion, you know, trying to find my way in the world. And so I wasn't actually dealing with my PTSD very effectively, so to speak. And when I was 12, 13, 14, I started to use cocaine and all sorts of drugs. Whatever you handed to me, I would just ingest it. And I got sent away for a year and a half to a state school that was supposed to help me to get better, because I asked my probation officer to send me somewhere where I would get help. Instead, it turned out that I was locked up in this place with other disturbed and traumatized kids. And there was like a wooden box in the basement that they used to put kids in orange jumpers, just like in jail, lock them up in the basement, and I'd go do my chores and I would like let them out and they would run around the house. And so that is an informing, this is informing you that I actually already knew what I wanted to do and what I needed, but I couldn't, no one could help me to articulate it. And so as an adult now, I'm just coming out of hiding and I'm just sort of like understanding like just the connection to everything that harm reduction builds. And I see my friends on the streets who are like severely traumatized with PTSD often. And one night I was walking down the street and there was this guy, Pyro, sitting on the street drunk out of his mind. And I said hello to him and I sat down next to him and he said, "Can you just sit with me?" So I sat with him and he's like, "Can you hold me for a little while?" And I said, "No, man, I can't do that." But then he started crying. So I put my arm around him and I held his head on my shoulder and he cried. And after like maybe 30 seconds later, he was like, "That's all I needed. That's all I wanted." And to me, that's harm reduction. Yeah. Just meeting people where they're at and allowing them to fall apart, even if it's just briefly, without judgment. And so that's my mission in life. That's all I pretty much have. It's just like, you know, and I practice cautious kindness. I tell people all the time, you don't have to like invite everyone into your home, but you can invite them into your space for a brief moment in time and just give them some sort of encouragement and comfort once in a while. You know, even if they're trying to hustle you, you can just sort of like, whatever. That's pretty much it. Yeah. So that's harm reduction for me anyways.
Right.
I don't know what else to say.
Well, I'm curious, Kat, if you can say a little bit more about like what your experience was in other forms of programs how your thinking has been influenced since you started practicing harm reduction.
Well, after shooting up cocaine and binge drinking for quite a number of years, I went to AA because I really did not like NA because it just made me want to use. Because if you talk about cocaine all the time to a cocaine addict, they're just going to want to get high. So I got clean for like probably 9 years. But it was like a wee program. And I was like, but I did this work. And none of y'all people talk to me after meetings. I'm so lonely. And so then I just kind of was like disillusioned by the whole idea of the wee thing. Because I was not a squeaky wheel and I didn't get the grease. So I got ignored all the time. And so like, I just stopped going to 12-step meetings. However, I do like the beginner's meeting on Saturday night. It's a very special place. But I started going to harm reduction meetings.
Yeah, harm reduction works
because it just sort of incorporated every philosophy I've ever unknowingly had in a really actual way. And I got to actually sort of practice what I preached, which is like amazing. I wish more people did that. So, yeah. I don't know what else to say.
So you're listening to out there on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring, and I'm talking with Albie Park and Kat Alonzo from Harm Reduction Hedgehogs and Harm Reduction Works, HRH413. I think we'll take another little music break, and Kate Bush is here.
No swears. No curse words.
Feel how it feels.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring, in the studio today with live guests Albie Park and Kat Alonzo from Harm Reduction 413. Harm Reduction Hedgehog?
HRH 413.
HRH 413. You think I'd have it straight by now. Do you think I'd have it like clarified, memorized? So Kat, when you're doing street outreach, what does that actually like what do you do?
Well, basically it's brand new, and it's, I wouldn't characterize it that way, but it just started suddenly last year when I got up off my bed feeling sorry for myself and realizing that I had a meet and greet with Lindsay Sabadosa and a couple other, Joe Comerford and some other people, and then I just kind of leapt into this world where politics are suddenly a part of my life. And so I was so proud of myself for doing that, that I showed up at the State House, and that was embarrassing. I had to chase a bus down the street and jump on it, throw my bike against a tree and chain it up, and then I go to the State House doing like ranked choice voting, actually. Mm-hmm. And I end up walking in with a painting and a poem for Lindsay Sabadosa, and I started freaking out and panicking because I always get insomnia when I have to talk to people, and like last night, and I show up for this thing at the State House and I freaked out, and I look like I had wrinkly dirty pants on, I'm sweating buckets, and I did that, and I said, okay, you did it. And then I'm like walking away, and Lindsay was like, hey, wait, Kat. And I was like, oh my god, somebody remembers my name. So then there was a whole other thing with that story, but I ended up having to go home because I flipped out and got scared. And I took that information with me, though, and I tucked it under my belt. And just like I tucked under my belt the harm reduction meeting, I was like, okay. And then I just like kept doing things that were really scary and showing up. And so now for me, this whole year has been about just going on the street on my bicycle, hearing my name, realizing that I actually exist and people actually care about what I'm doing, and talking to every person I meet. I ask first, this is what I do on the street. I say, what's your name? My name is Kat. And I just ask, how are you? And ask questions. And I have lawyers, doctors, and criminally insane, destitute people like talking to me on the street, and I tucked that under my belt, and I said, okay, this is what I'm going to be doing for the rest of my life. I'm just going to make sure that I show up for life every day and ask people their name. It's so simple. Like, what is your name? It opens up a whole world. And so, like, now when I go down the street on my bike, I know pretty much everyone that I see. More, they actually probably know me better than I know myself, actually. But that's, for me, like, that's outreach. It's, like, going and showing up and, like, asking people their names, and also bringing, like, information to people, like the police, to my local politicians, about how people just need food and shelter and how much food gets thrown away in the dumpsters and how I've gone hungry and I worry about shelter all the time because I'm really poor, and how some people in the streets don't want shelter and prefer being on the streets because they don't trust the system. And some people want help but aren't going to get it. You know, so I'm trying to figure out a way to create that conversation with anyone who will listen, pretty much, is what I do. Anyone who will listen. Like yesterday, this guy, his dog hadn't eaten in 2 days. So I told people that I walked by. I said, there's this guy, this person without a home sitting there who hasn't eaten in 2 days. Instead of giving him cash, because him and his girlfriend can figure that out themselves, bring some dog food for his dog, because I couldn't let it go. It just really upset me and it made me cry. So I was just like, that's what I do every day. I just pay attention on my bicycle and I ask people questions about where they're at. And it has changed my life so much that I feel like crying now just talking about it, because it's so special. Just listening to people's stories and just taking time, you know, to actually really sort of be with them where they're at. And it's changed my life. And I actually feel more healed by that than I do by any therapy I've ever had in my entire life. So that's pretty much it.
It's amazing. Yeah. Actually, the natural talent that Kat has to do outreach it's astonished me. It's amazing, actually. And for the most part, Kat goes on instinct with this, mm-hmm. and the instincts have been really right on.
Because mm-hmm. that's where I've been.
Yeah, you got mm-hmm. a lifetime of experience mm-hmm. showing the way.
Yeah.
Do you want to say about the meeting, the details of the meeting?
Yeah, so Harm Reduction Works, HRW, meets every Tuesday night at 6. So tonight there's a meeting at 6 p.m. at the Northampton Recovery Center, which is at 2 Gleason Plaza in Northampton. And the meeting is actually open. So anyone who's interested in learning anything about harm reduction for any reason is welcome. It's not just for folks who are trying to do something or considering doing something about their drug using or drinking. Family members have been there, friends, professionals in the field have been there. And it's been actually really an amazing thing. Because one of the things that when we first started, because this started here in Northampton in just a year ago, actually. We did a national launch at the Drug Policy Alliance conference in St. Louis. So now we have meetings starting to pop up in different states. So, like, there are three in New York. I think one just started in Jersey. I think Philly is looking at it. So we're starting to get a lot of phone calls just saying, how do we do this? What's mm-hmm. it about? Even though the script is online, and you can see the script at hrh413.org. you can follow us on Facebook and Instagram, too. But so the meeting is open to everybody. And the first time that we had the meeting, one of the things that was most astonishing to us was the amount of grief mm-hmm. that's in the community, the amount of pain people are walking around with as a direct result of overdose death.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yes. And it's affecting
mm-hmm. yeah.
it's affecting people who mm-hmm. might not, you just walking down the street, you might not think, oh, that person mm-hmm. has like been, mm-hmm. you know,
yeah.
my best friend yeah. Has lost two kids
mm-hmm.
To substance related issues, and it's really interesting because this has really forced me to sort of look at like what is harm reduction actually really doing?
Uh-huh.
What is Harm Reduction Works really about? And what I started to realize is that what I'm really curious about with Harm Reduction Works is whether or not, but what happens if you actually try to create community and support for people mm-hmm. that's based in kindness, compassion, and respect? What could happen?
Mm-hmm.
And coming together to create community out of kindness, compassion, and respect with others and increasing knowledge mm-hmm. is it's a beautiful thing. And that's one of the things mm-hmm. I should probably mention is that HRW is – it's exercise-driven. And what I mean by that is that I or somebody else will choose something to read, a podcast to listen to, a presentation. So it's really open, but because it's exercise driven, people who don't have a lot of experience with harm reduction, but have an inkling that it might be the right way to go or want to simply explore more with some guidance. And you can call me, you can actually start to educate your community about harm reduction, why it works, mm-hmm. why it's valid. And that's particularly interesting to us in communities where say syringe access is illegal or just having a syringe is illegal.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And it's not just illegal, it's felonious. Right. Mm-hmm. So this is a way of sort of like going around and getting in through the back door
mm-hmm.
because what I believe in is the people who really actually truly practice harm reduction versus just working in harm reduction, and that's not the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But people who work or who actually really, really practice harm reduction, the thing that it is that we have to do, or what we're actually teaching, is two things. One is survival at the very basic foundational level. One is survival. And the second thing, the more that I thought about it, because unlike, say, a typical recovery story where there's what happened before, then what happened, then what's happened after, it's like a redemption story machine, right? Yeah. And harm reduction is not quite the same in the sense that when a harm reduction goal often will be not necessarily just about the drug use or the drinking. It could be about the fact that the first goal might be instead say something like, you know, I'm getting in trouble because I miss work every Monday. You know, so the conversation might be actually about, well, what can you do to avoid that? Mm-hmm. That might involve curbing or changing habits of using, or it might not. Right. So people just have in harm reduction, a typical story just is like, it's just their life. It just keeps on going. So what I started to realize that as opposed to redemption, in a lot of ways, what harm reduction teaches is resilience. You know, because one of the things I've come to understand is that bad things are just going to happen. Uh-huh. And I keep on thinking to myself, you know, well, when things get back to normal and bad things just keep happening, you know, and I'm not whining. It's just to all these people that I know, really great people, really, you know, nobody deserves it, but bad things happen. And the question is, how are you going to get back up? And how are you going to get back up if the thing that happened is so stigmatizing that you're afraid to talk about it? Mm-hmm. You know, and if you want that, that's what harm reduction is about. That's what harm reduction works is founded as. And it's a part of our strategy to try to educate more and more people about harm reduction to start to dismantle the war on drugs. Yeah. Because my perspective, my personal feeling is that the carceral system is essentially the way that we've retooled slavery in this country. And personally, I don't see how you can start reading stuff and not come to that conclusion. I just don't see how that's possible. So it's again, I mean, what HRW, Tuesday nights at 6, meeting tonight, Northampton Recovery Center, 2 Gleason Plaza in Northampton, Massachusetts. Everyone is welcome.
Peace.
Do you have anything more you wanted to add, Kat?
I just wanted to finish saying peace to all the people on the streets today, the sick and suffering. And to my friend Eliza, who passed away from a drug overdose on her birthday. And to my friend Jess, who killed herself this year. So, peace. Just show up. Stay alive.
I want to thank you both so much for coming in. It's helped me to, you know, think more about how, just want to continue to practice that, how, like, non-judgmental compassion, it opens the door to honesty.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ruthie, for having us. Thank you, Ruthie.
Yeah.
Go Trinidad Bikes.
Trinidad Bicycle Osmosis Project.
Yes.
So I'm still collecting bikes till April. Oh, but before we go off, I've been talking with Albie Park and Kat Alonzo.
Bodziak, but I leave my last name out because it's too complicated.
Kat Alonzo Bodziak. HRH 413.
Thank you, Ruthie.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, people.
Yep. So it's election day. If you haven't voted yet, go out there and vote if you can. If you can't vote, make sure you get registered so you can vote in November. What else? Also tonight, there's a surge meeting, the monthly surge meeting, showing up for racial justice. I think it's at 5:30. I think at the Friends Meeting House, but you can look at the Surge Western Mass Facebook page for more details about that meeting. Anything else? I can't think of anything else, so we'll go out with Buffy St. Marie, Power in the Blood.
Power in the blood. Power. Power in the blood. Power in the blood. Power in the blood.
for spin doctor's medicine. Corporation government selling me some cover-up. Weaponizing pesticides, poison in my groceries. Nothing but another drug, a license they can buy and sell. No, I don't mind dying. No time for backhanded compliments from television anchor men, desperate for incident. Real estate assassins exploiting our predicament. Everything depends upon it being in their interest. No, I don't mind dying. I don't mind dying. I don't mind dying. But when that color comes, I will say no, no, no to war. No. There is power in the blood, justice in the soul. And when that color comes, I will say no, no, no to war. Power in the blood. And when night color comes, I will send no, no, no to war. There's military interest. There are GMOs in paradise. Bioweapons high up on the call sheet. Young soldiers driving tanks, but old thieves, they drive the banks. And you never see a uniform on Wall Street. There's power in the blood. There is power in the blood.
This is Ward Morehouse, WXOJ LP Northampton, 103.3 FM.